QCQ, this is the South Coast Amateur Radio, an extra course class. So, welcome to the outreach program, sponsored by the South Coast Amateur Radio Service. This program has been established to help those wishing to learn more about our hobby and further assist those wishing to upgrade license status. Letting us off. The program tonight will be an in-depth course pertaining to what one should know when studying for the extra class license. This course will be conducted with two sessions weekly, which will be at 7 p.m., 2300 Zulu, each Tuesday, and at 7 p.m., 2300 Zulu, each Sunday evening. For those that are already licensed and wish either a refresher course or just like to listen, please connect to SCAR's server at either EchoLink node number 96140, IRLP node 9614, All-Star node AST 27404, or DMR TG, here comes a long one, 314-5983, or DSTAR at XLX004-J, and one more final, Fusion YSFXLX004. And as Gordon says, I'm going to buy a nickel. There's that spy in the sky again. For those who are interested, please contact Mike at Kilo Delta Zero, Charlie Delta Quebec, via email at voip@scarsvoip.com. That's Sierra Charlie Alpha Romeo Sierra Victor October India Papa, to enroll in the class and be given directions as the study material required and the manner you will be connected into the course. The material being presented is formatted from data obtained from the ARRL and is simply being forwarded in the presentation format by SCARS. Should anyone take issue to some of the technical statements made in keeping with not interrupting class and session, please convey your comments or suggestions to the outreach program at voip@scarsvoip.com. It should be mentioned this course covers only the requirements pertaining to the United States Part 97 rules and does not include other requirements that may be found in foreign countries. Should any other country other than the United States wish to have their own licensing session on the server, just drop us an email, and you know where, voip@scarsvoip.com. One more drop. This session, this evening, is being recorded and posted on our website at www.scarsvoip.com. Please note, for all of our class members and instructors, it's extremely important that we stay on the same page during these classes. The only question pool and copy thereof that should be used when participating in this class should be the one found posted on our website. Publications from other sources may or may not be current and should not be used during our sessions. Do we have any emergencies or out of the ordinary business that needs to be handled before we start this evening's program? Okay, at this point we will start to begin. We have two instructors tonight. We have Whiskey 4, Ralph, Foxtrot, Juliet, Roger in Pennsylvania outside Wrigley Park. And we have November, Oscar, it's actually NO7 Oscar, George in Nottingham, Maryland, outside of Townsend, Maryland. Now, as I look up here, I am not seeing Roger showing, but he has the first Q&A. Maybe I'm just not showing it on my list here. So, Roger, Whiskey 4, Ralph, Foxtrot, Juliet, please come aboard now. Over.
Well, good evening, Mike. Are you copying me? Over.
Yes, Chief, I do copy you. I do copy you. Just I didn't see you on the list. Yes, Roger, you've got the floor to begin. KD0CDQ.
KD0CDQ and the net, this is W4RFJ. Roger, also known as Chief in Ridley Park, Pennsylvania. And I'll start off. I've got a couple of questions that are so closely related that I'd like to go over them both. The first one is Echo 3 Alpha 01. What is the approximate maximum separation measured along the surface of the Earth between two stations communicating by EME? And the answer is one of these four. 500 miles if the moon is at perigee, 2,000 miles if the moon is at apogee, 5,000 miles if the moon is at perigee, and 12,000 miles if the moon is visible by both stations. I guess the answer is 12,000 miles, and that is if the moon is visible by both stations. And the next question is Echo 3 Alpha 03. When scheduling EME contacts, which of these conditions will generally result in the least path loss? When the moon is at perigee, when the moon is full, when the moon is at apogee, or when the MUF, or maximum usable frequency, is above 30 megahertz? Well, the answer to that question is when the moon is at perigee. The maximum separation is approximately 12,000 miles, and having both stations able to see the moon is self-explanatory. The path with least path loss is at perigee, or the closest to Earth, as apogee is the furthest from Earth. Digging into the mechanics of the orbits, I found some information that I will make available, but it may assist in your studies. And that's basically definition of terms for Earth-orbiting satellites. Let me pause and see if anybody wants to comment on those questions. This is W4RFJ with the Extra Class course. Okay. There's a lot of science involved with that satellite stuff, but I've got another group that kind of falls in line with each other, and it deals with... Well, I'll just read the questions, and I know the sheriff's got a question that kind of falls in between, but I'll let him read his question before I read the second one and give a further explanation. E3A05, tropospheric propagation of microwave signals often occurs in association with what phenomenon? The answers to choose from are gray line, lightning discharges, warm and cold fronts, sprites, and jets. So the answer to that question is warm and cold fronts. And I'll get into an explanation after I go through the next question. George, N070, you want to read your question, E3A09, over.
Well, good evening, Chief, and good evening to everyone on the South Park Lecture Class. Well, you know, Chief, the FCC question pool stuck a question about MIGO scatter right in the middle of your two questions, both of which dealt with microwave propagation. So since you are already talking about microwave signals, let me defer to you for Echo 3A010. And then I'll come back and pick up with Echo 3A09 after you cover that one. Is that okay with you, Chief? W4RFJ, N070. Over.
N070, this is W4RFJ. Outstanding. Yes, I will continue on with that then. Okay, so we found out that that the tropospheric propagation of microwave signals often occurs in association with warm and cold fronts. E3 Alpha 10 reads, which type of atmospheric structure can create a path for microwave propagation? The answers to choose from are the jet stream, temperature inversion, wind shear, or a dust devil. And I got to tell you, the answer is temperature inversion. Whether it is a cold front or a warm front, the colder air being heavier tends to fold under the warm air, which tends to be lighter, therefore creating a gap. There's a space in there between the warm and cold front that acts like a waveguide, commonly known as a temperature inversion, I've personally experienced VHF contacts under the same phenomena. This allowed me to communicate hundreds of miles between Virginia and New York. And this happens all the time when you have cold fronts or warm fronts moving around. So what we're talking about is warm and cold air basically folding over each other and creating a temperature inversion. Are there any questions concerning what I just covered? Please call W4RFJ. Okay, hearing none, George, go ahead and hit them with the meteor scatter, W4RFJ.
Well, thank you, Chief, and again, good evening, and congratulations to each of you that is excited to take the time to review the extra class license course, license class questions, or that maybe you've decided to upgrade as well. I applaud your efforts and desire. One big difference, too, that this particular cycle of extra class questions has is that it's talking about a lot of things that we may not have seen in earlier and even much earlier FCC class tests. For example, we're going to be talking about different propagations, media scatter, aurora, and different propagation methods here as a part of this section. So it's very interesting, but hold on to your hats. Let me reset. All right, the first of these questions now is Echo 3A09, referring to media scatter communications. Which of the following frequency ranges is most suited for meteor scatter communications? First answer, 1.8 to 1.9 megahertz. Second answer, 10 megahertz to 14 megahertz. Third answer, 28 to 148 megahertz. And fourth answer, 220 megahertz to 450 megahertz. Now the answer is that 28 to 148 megahertz is most suited for meteor scatter communications. Some operators say this is a frequency range just between HF longer range propagation and the shorter range, mostly line of sight, VHF frequencies that will bounce directly off of the meteor fragments. Okay, now I have a question for one of the students who would like to take it in the class, just so that we all understand. Would one of the students be willing to speak up and help us by defining what meteor scatter is? I would really like to have that help from someone. So any student who would like to try that question, please call Mike now, and then I'll come back with another question. So any student who can tell us what meteor scatter is, please call now. Over.
Whiskey 4 Romeo Foxtrot Juliet, unless somebody else answers.
Well, I don't hear any other takers, Chief. So, Mike, with your permission, thank you. I say to the CDQ, thank you. W4SJ, please, Chief. NO70, over.
NO70 with the extra class group here. This is W4RFJ. And I don't think it, I think it's more of a, as the meteors, especially when we have the meteor showers pretty much annually, the meteors actually burn up in the atmosphere and they cause ionization of particles as they strike and move through the atmosphere. So I think that's what we're looking at when we're talking about bouncing directly off of meteor scatter communications. Pretty much the ionization is done in the upper, well, actually all the way down until it stops burning, I guess. But anyway, that's my take on it. Over.
Well, thank you, Chief. I guess I wanted to give you an extra cup of coffee somehow, or coffee ice cream, one or the other. Very good. Thank you, sir. And by the way, referring to meteor activity in the atmosphere and things, meteors burning up, I'd like to remind you that right now is the time for the Perseid meteor showers that happen each year, about this time of the year. Very beautiful, and actually they seem to be a little more active this year than another year I tried to watch them. There is actually on a major social network video platform, you know, where you watch watch videos, you know which one I'm talking about, a live channel that is showing the Perseid meteor scatter activity. You can see the meteors burning up so as they go through the atmosphere. A very beautiful sight. So that is going on, so, but not during the class. You got to do the class tonight first now, but after the class, maybe you can head on over and take a look. All right, let me reset. So again, I'd like to welcome everyone to the South Pars Extra Class License Review. We're now up to question Echo 3, A12. And now we're going to talk about auroras, A-U-R-O-R-A, which, as you may recall, is that a lot of people know by those auroral lights, those beautiful lights at the poles of the Earth, magnetic poles of the Earth, that display such marvelous colors and shapes shifting around and changing around. Beautiful. So what is the cause of auroral activity? Answer A, the interaction in the F2 layer between the solar wind and the Van Allen belt. Answer B, an extreme low pressure area in the polar regions, a resetting. Answer C, the interaction in the E layer of charged particles from the sun with the Earth's magnetic field. And answer D, meteor showers concentrated in the extreme northern and southern latitudes. Now, I kind of gave you a bit of a hint when I talked about the aurora hitting the Earth's magnetic poles. So, auroral activity, A-U-R-O-R-A-L, auroral activity is the interaction of energy from the sun with the magnetic poles of the Earth, whose own magnetism is generated by the rotation of the Earth's inner core relative to the outer core's rotation, as well as other factors. Resetting. Auroral activity is observed in the northern and southern lights seen close to the north and south poles of the Earth. The energy to create these lights comes from the sun's cosmic rays slamming into the magnetic fields of the Earth at the poles of the Earth, the magnetic poles of the Earth. Therefore, the charged particles from the sun interacting with the Earth's magnetic field is the cause of auroral activity, which was answer C. All right, so with that, I think it's time for Chief to take a turn here, and I'll come back with some other propagation questions after that. So, Chief, are you... have you properly polarized your chair there for your question? W4RFJ, NO70, over.
NO70 and the group, this is W4RFJ. And again, I want to reiterate my profound excitement to have the people that are signed up with us to go over this question pool. Oh, excuse me. Sorry about that. I just about choked on a piece of popcorn. I'm definitely entertained by all this. What is meant by circularly polarized electromagnetic waves? This is question number Echo 3 Alpha 1-4. One of the four answers is waves with an electric field bent into a circular shape. Another answer is waves with a rotating electric field. And yet another answer, waves that circle the Earth. And last but not least, waves produced by a loop antenna. I'd like to put it out to the people that are signed up to the class. If they'd come back and take a stab at that question. Again, waves with an electric field bent into a circular shape, waves with a rotating electric field, waves that circle the Earth, and waves produced by a loop antenna. Anybody want to try their skills at this question? Please call W4RFJ.
Kilo 5 Zulu India will take a stab.
Kilo Golf 5 Zulu India. Let me see. Tom, yeah, I remember you. Come on in. Take a stab. W4RFJ.
Well, thank you, Chief, and thank you both for taking the net and allowing us to learn something today. I'm going to say waves with a rotating electric field, and I kind of liken it to, well, two things, either a pig's tail or an auger bit, and the auger bit spinning, and that electric wave is just like an opposite of a trail of maybe a firework or something when it spins through space. I don't know how it works, but it is probably just rotating as it goes down. Over.
And KG5ZI in the group, this is W4RFJ. Well, I think you're spot on. The answer is correct. Waves with a rotating electric field. I don't know if you've actually dove into VHF and UHF, actually HF antennas. Most terrestrial electromagnetic waves can be or usually are polarized in a vertical or a horizontal state. And usually you get an attenuation of approximately 60 dB between the two. Circularly polarized systems experience the same phenomenon of a large attenuation between right-hand and left-hand circular polarization. And you'll find that most of the satellites up there are basically spinning. And they spin so that they can maintain stability. There you go. Stability. So physically, the electromagnetic waves are being polarized in a circular fashion. In other words, the electric field is rotating. You can also, let me grab a nickel. You can also generate a circularly polarized magnetic wave by making a spiral antenna, also known as a helical antenna, and the direction that it rotates determines the right-hand or left-hand circular polarization. Also, you can take vertical, or you can take Yagis and position them 90 degrees from each other and put one about 90 degrees forward of the other, and depending upon which one is first determines whether it's right-hand or left-hand circular polarization. So there you have it, waves with a rotating electric field. Good job there, Tom. Back over to you, Mr. Sheriff of Nottingham, and 070W4RFJ.
Well, thank you, Chief. W4RFJ and the South Cards Extra Class License Review, of course, assembled tonight, N070, and glad to have you here with us. All right, our next assigned question for this evening, representative of other questions also within the pool, is Echo 3, Baker 03, E3B03. What is the best time of day for trans-equatorial propagation? All right, I'm going to use those two words again, trans-equatorial propagation. We'll come back to and let people take a shot at looking at defining that in a minute, so get your answers ready, please, okay? All right, let's discuss that question. A higher level of radiation from the sun is received at the equator, creating greater ionization charges. Ionization begins to increase after sunrise when the sun's charged particles begin to hit the ionosphere. The ionization level, or accumulation of charged particles, raises and therefore by mid-afternoon are greatest. These charges start to move under the action of the magnetic and electric fields outwards from the equator. Resetting. Now, the level of ionization rises, and by mid-afternoon, the ionization levels are noticeably higher in the regions about 10 to 20 degrees away by the compass from the geomagnetic equator. And that is because of the difference between electrostatic charges and electromagnetic levels, just like we learned and studied in the difference between capacitors and inductors. Now, after sunset, when no more radiation is being received from the sun, the levels of ionization in that part of the hemisphere start to fall as the ions and electrons recombine. Therefore, the conditions for trans-equatorial propagation, requiring both the sun's charged particles and the equator's magnetic fields, are best in the afternoon and early evening when the sun has had a chance to build up the charge and the equatorial magnetic field has had time to move outward from the equator out to that 10 to 20 degrees out, creating the paths needed for this unique and exciting propagation path when it occurs. So the answer then is going to be C, in the afternoon or early evening. Now, just so that we do understand this, did any of you pull out your pencils and get your answer ready? Could someone please help me with a definition for trans-equatorial propagation? What is that from what you see? Please call now. This is NO70. Over.
Well, I got a website that has the description, and it's pretty informative. KG5ZI.
KG5ZI, I congratulate you on your research, sir. Thank you. Please proceed. NO70, over.
Okay. Thank you, George. Website that came up on Google was www.electronics-notes.com, and it's an article. And it says, what is trans-equatorial propagation, or TEP? It supports communications over distances between 2,500 and 5,000 kilometers. These paths occur across the equator in a north-south or south-north direction. Occasionally, angles up to 20 degrees from north to south direction have been known, but the closer to the north direction are better. That makes sense. Also, trans-equatorial propagation generally occurs in the late afternoon and early evening. Signals propagated using this mode tend to suffer some distortion as a result of multipath effects, but despite this, modes like single sideband are usable. There's a lot here. It looks like it was something that was discovered in the 1940s by military operators and hams, and it appeared that the propagation paths were available well after traditional theory said that the propagation would be available. So the sun definitely does play a big part. Over.
KG5ZI and the South Cars Extra Crash Course in 070. Well, thank you, Tom. Yes, and given those distances, that's why I used the words exciting propagation, because it really can be. So very informative, and thank you. And I'm struck by the fact that our ham radio operator predecessors in earlier generations have contributed so much to the art of our communications as radio operators. Isn't that marvelous that they do that? All right, so that covers the question ECHO3B03. We finished that. We're now going to move on to a different topic. I'm sure some of you have used dummy loads in your shack during testing or calibration or monitoring of your equipment or equipment adjustment and making it work better. So we're going to look now at question ECHO4B06, ECHO4Baker06. May we reset? The question asks, how much power is being absorbed by the load when a directional power meter connected between a transmitter and a terminating load reads 100 watts forward power and 25 watts reflected power? Okay, so you have a dummy load attached to a transmitter, or I should say a load. The question just says a load. It doesn't specify whether it's an active or a dummy load. It just says load. So you have a transmitter with 100 watts forward power and a terminating load that creates 25 watts reflective power. So the question is, how much power is being absorbed by the load when you have 100 forward and 25 reflective? Let me reset. So let's discuss the question. 100 watts is going out to the load. However, because of an impedance mismatch, some of the electromagnetic energy is being used to form the reflected standing wave with a power of 25 watts in the reflected wave. That reflected standing wave is on the antenna and not available for the load, leaving only 100 watts minus 25 watts reflected, or 75 watts is then available for the load to absorb, and if an antenna then to transmit an energy or to be absorbed if it is a dummy load. So you, that's a 100 minus 25 equals 75 watts when you're looking at forward versus reflected power with load and transmitter and load. In this case, the answer was very simple, a simple subtraction. In other cases, be careful. You may get involved with calculating phase shifts and so forth. So read the question carefully, please. All right, are there any questions on Echo 4B06? Please call now. Over. All right, hearing none, I think Chief must have his coffee cup refilled by now, and I can't let him sit there too long without anything to do tonight. W4RFJ, NO70, over to you.
NO70 in the group, this is W4RFJ. My next question is E3B08. What is the term for the long path opening that exists between two points on the Earth which are simultaneously near sunrise and sunset? The possible answers are transequatorial, another is sporadic E, then another is long path, and the last of the selections is gray line. So, would anybody like to take a pop at this one? This is W4RFJ concerning E3B08.
KN6FPS, David, I got the answer, I think.
KN6FPS, good evening and welcome. What's your answer, sir?
I'm thinking the gray line, although in my amateur extra book from ARRL, it says that question has been withdrawn, even though it covers it in the text.
That's odd. I use the, I'll have to check into that. But your answer is correct. Dave, the gray line area coined in 1975, the gray line area of the globe is an area that exists between full night and sunlit areas. The gray line effects refer to locations along the terminator encircling the globe along a great circle route. The gray line provides a low loss path of varying width and duration depending on the frequency. On the low bands, these propagation openings only last for a few minutes. On 40 meters, you may only get a 15 to 20 minute QSO maximum. So I will check into that that response, David, about this being removed. I don't think it was, but anyway, Mike, do you have any information on that, W4RFJ calling the big kahuna in Texas? All right. I'll check into that, Dave. Thank you for the bringing that to my attention. The next question on the list is Echo 3B11. At what time of day can sporadic E propagation occur? Is it only around sunset, or only around sunset or sunrise, or only in hours of darkness? And the last option is anytime. Anybody want to take a stab at that one, or did that one get removed too? W4RFJ.
KD9NDJ piping in.
KD9NDJ, good evening, Ken, and thanks for joining us. Do you have an answer to the question? Over.
Yeah, I think the answer is anytime. That one did not get removed. Yeah, when they say sporadic, that suggests anytime. KD9NDJ.
Well, that's excellent. Very good answer. Anytime. As a matter of fact, sporadic E or ES is an unusual form of radio propagation using characteristics of the Earth's ionosphere. Sporadic E activity peaks predictably in the summertime in both hemispheres. In North America, the peak is most noticeable in mid to late June, trailing off through late July and into early August. The time of day also has a significant effect on sporadic E. There are two main peaks that occur. The first is around midday, and then there's another around 7 p.m. So it is found that there are fewer occurrences in the afternoon and particularly in the morning. Okay, with that said, I'm going to pass it down to NO70, November Oscar 7 Oscar. Go ahead, Sheriff, pick her up. I think you've got E3B12 coming up.
W4RFJ in the South Yards Extra Class, NO70, Nancy Oscar 7 Oscar, Nancy Ocean 7 Ocean, either one. I love the beach, so anyway. Now, the reason I said that is that we're going to be talking about chordal hop propagation. Okay, let me clarify the spelling of chordal hop, okay? This is spelled C-H. O-R-D-A-L, okay? Not C-O-R-D as in electrical cord. This is chordal hop propagation. And the question is, what is the primary characteristic of chordal hop propagation? Now, I'm going to give you a hint that this is going to be talking about skip paths along the surface of the Earth, whether it be overland, oversea, just, you know, along the surface of the Earth. So let's keep that in mind. All right. Would anyone like to take a effort at answering or defining chordal hop propagation before we discuss? Please call now. NO70. Over.
KG5ZI.
KG5ZI, the floor is yours. Thank you, Tom. NO70. Over.
Okay, this is KG5ZI. Thank you, George. I'll take a stab at this. My impression is that it is the propagation that is bouncing numerous times over the ionosphere, allowing different distances available for transmission and receiving. The answer would be B, successive ionospheric refractions without an intermediate reflection from the ground. So basically what I'm thinking is that it is allowing you to hear a station on the first hop, which is a certain distance, and then maybe able to communicate with a second station further distance on the second hop and so forth. And I think it does it multiple times. So I hope that's right. KG5ZI.
KG5ZI, NO70. Well, thank you, Tom. I'm not sure if you would be able to hear it on one of the intermediate hops because it's stopping the ionosphere unless you had a really high antenna. But when it reached the end of that tunnel, but that's a good question. So I'm going to have to look into that and see. Well, let's discuss the question according to the literature. The daylight F2 and nighttime F propagation layers do merge after sunset and then split up again after sunrise. So you have the F2 and F propagation layers splitting up again after sunrise. Overnight, the F propagation layer loses its ionization density, and therefore it loses its ability to reflect back radio signals. Sometimes, however, the F layer remains dense enough to reflect a signal with a less steep angle, causing a longer skip path along the surface of the Earth to a point much farther away without touching the ground. Let me reset. Then the signal can bounce or refract back and forth through the path without reflecting from the ground. Therefore, the answer would be B, successive ionospheric refractions without an intermediate reflection from the ground. Now, Tom, you had an excellent answer and a good fill-in, and that's a very good observation that you made, so thank you for that. All right, so once again, Echo 3B012, the primary characteristic of chordal hop propagation, spelled Charlie Hotel Oscar Romeo Delta Alpha Lima. The primary characteristic would be successive ionospheric refractions without an immediate reflection from the ground. And that's what you want to be looking for. All right, so any other questions or thoughts for Tom or anyone regarding chordal hop propagation before we move on to the last question for the evening? Please call now, 8070, over. Well, nothing heard. And Tom, I want to thank you for your excellent contributions and research skills and others as well that have increased the involvement of the class tonight with your contributions. Thank you very much. Both, I'm sure Chief feels the same way as well. So let's go to Echo 3, Charlie 02. This is a question about space weather. Now, let me mention something about space weather here. Some of you, especially extra class, may have been around enough where you checked weather forecasts, ground weather forecasts, for thunderstorms and rain and so forth, conditions that could absorb radio waves or affect your propagation. Well, what we have learned, of course, as time has progressed, is that space weather, the weather out in space between the sun and the Earth, is as real, and solar winds are as powerful as the Earth type of weather. So the study of space weather is a discipline that a lot of people are finding fascinating. It is an exciting career path for many people. There are even space weather engineering schools that you can attend to prepare for a career in space weather forecasting. So let me commend you to check some of those resources for yourself, either for your personal interest or as a possible career path in case you might be looking at that. Let me reset. There also are some social media videos that include pictures of the space weather activity, and there is a NOAA, National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration Agency website that has various displays of space weather propagation, sunspot activity, graphs of activity, solar activity, and so forth. And we're going to be talking about one of those right now. So you may want to check out that NOAA website as well. Resetting. All right, so question Echo 3, Charlie 02. Echo 3, Charlie 02. What is indicated by a rising A or K index, referring to space weather? All right, the first answer is increasing disruption of the geomagnetic field. Second possible answer is decreasing disruption of the geomagnetic field. The third possible answer is higher levels of solar UV radiation. And the fourth answer is an increase in the critical frequency. So would anyone like to give us their understanding or impression of A or K index or your interest level in space weather? Would love to hear your observations. Please call now, 970. Over.
6, Victor.
Well, thank you, Gordon. Appreciate your coming back, and good evening to you, sir. Good evening to Kathy, the Sunshine, our net manager. And I saw a great cartoon today. Said, don't make me use my teacher voice on that. So I sure am glad that you came back with an answer before I had to use my teacher voice. So, good evening, Gordon. Thank you. KY6V, NO70, over.
Boy, you're far instead ahead of me, George. I'm still looking for the old horse I had. KY6V here. Well, the answer to your question is the first one that you posed. It's an increasing disruption of the geomagnetic field. But what I really wanted to jump in and add to what you've already mentioned is that if you go to, guys and gals, if you go to the QRZ homepage, there is a section within that homepage called Solar Weather. And it gives you some of the pertinent facts as to the day's activity. But in addition, there is a place that you can pull up a yet second or third page of information. The details in a nice format, what each of the solar designators mean and what it is actually reading for you. Now, I will say that in addition, let me buy a nickel here for a second, that in addition, our website at scarsvoip.com has solar information on our homepage as well. It's over on the right-hand side, in the right-hand sidebar. And by using that information, you can lead yourself to this informational page that I was referring to on QRZ. So for those that are interested, whether it's career-oriented or not, it's immaterial. It's a good place to get your feet wet. Thank you, George. KY6V, over.
KY6V and the South Park course, the NO7F. Well, thank you, Gordon. Yes, and you know, I am fascinated by the fact that nowadays it helps our hobby by checking both kinds of weather, ground weather and space weather, to get the best operation results. All right. Yes, your answer that you indicated, increasing disruption of the geomagnetic field would be increased, would be indicated by a rising A or K index. So let's discuss that. A rising A or K index shows that more of the sun's energy is being released from its fusion activity, creating light and cosmic rays and solar rays. The more active the sun and the more of the released energy directed toward the Earth and hitting the Earth, the more aggressive will be the changes in the Earth's geomagnetic field, with the result of an increased disruption of the geomagnetic field, and therefore the answer A being correct. Let me continue with another thought. Resetting. Right, a massive solar storm measured by an increase in A or K index, or measured by class M, and X-ray activity and particle emission impacts on Earth when directed from the Sun straight at the Earth with a magnitude close to the magnitude seen in the late 1800s and 1900s. Those impacts, if they were to occur today, would cause a worldwide disruption in infrastructure, resulting in massive destruction of communications and satellite capabilities, interruption of household electricity supply, interruption of manufacturing and food packing, computerized equipment, failure of transportation vehicles and control circuits, among other damages. And the lack of these resources would cause massive civil unrest and eventual disruption of modern society if this space weather storm, measured by an increase in A or K index, were to be as strong as those last two major storms experienced prior to today's computerized society. So as a ham radio operator, I better reset here. So as a ham radio operator who would be looked to for previously unsolicited help, meaning you, your role as an informed and educated operator familiar with modern solar and terrestrial weather risks, as well as other risks to our communications infrastructure, will reflect directly upon the reputation of our amateur radio service and future FCC frequency allocations to our service. And I know Chief put in the text box what, but I know Chief has some thoughts about the value and the future of our amateur radio service. W4RJ might ask for some, I know putting you on the spot, Ben asked you earlier, but would you give us a couple of your thoughts about the future of amateur radio service given these changes in technology and understanding that we're discussing with these extra class review. W4RJ, please help NO70. Over.
Oh, boy. Yeah, kind of put me on the spot there. That had nothing to do with what you were doing. Somebody had texted and didn't quite understand it. But anyway, I have a firm belief that a lot of the amateur radio service is already getting the support and the technical prowess, I guess I should say. But what really messes things up is politics, and I'll just let it rest right there. Back over to you there, Sheriff, W4RFJ.
W4RJ, NO70. And well, thank you, Chief. I had not thought about that factor. But yes, it is interesting about the need for diplomacy as well as we offer or approach different relief organizations to help with communication needs as well, which is all the more reason for congratulating each of you who has taken time to join us for these extra class review classes. By your presence and attendance and learning, you are definitely increasing your value that you can offer in the future to the people that come to know you as a capable and efficient and responsible radio operator. So thank you for being here. All right, so with that, let me see if there is anyone else with any thoughts regarding A or K indexes, the ionization activity and so forth that pertains to Echo 3C02. Anyone else would like to make any comments on that question, please, or similar questions, any other questions tonight, please call now, NO70. Over.
ZI, I'd like to just make an observation.
All right, I have KG5ZI. Anyone else? Over.
KD0CDQ.
All right, and I'll recognize KD0CDQ, and since he's in that control, I'll let him ask after his observation for any other observations. All right, so first of two on the list, KG5ZI. Tom, thank you so much, and back, would appreciate hearing what you have to say now. KG5ZI, NO70, over.
Okay, thank you, George. I just wanted to take this moment, seems like a good opportunity to just specify something. I think we need to know the ins and outs of lots of different things, including space weather, so that when there is an actual emergency, we'd be able to tell if we have to use HF, if it's going to be viable or not, And if not, we can come up with alternatives before we're out in the field trying to make communications happen. Contingencies and redundancies are very important. That's how it applies to that question. The other observation I have is just a general one about amateur radio. Our predecessors, way back in the days, were very, very smart individuals. And the example of that was what we just looked at before, where that propagation effect there was from the 1940s, discovered by Hams and some other folks. And I think we need to continue that tradition. Even though the Internet is available and can provide quick answers, we do need to keep gray matter into the play here, into the fore, so that we may be able to contribute. I think the more we learn, the more we can continue the art of ham radio like our predecessors. And that's my two cents worth. I'm trying, but, you know, you run into everyday life, and sometimes that gets in the way. But international goodwill and keep learning, folks. That's the way to go. KG5ZI.
KG5ZI in the South Park's Extra Class Course in 070. Well said, Tom. Thank you, sir. And KD0CDQ also had an observation, so I'll turn it to him for his observation. And then since he's in that control tonight, invite him to ask for any other student feedback where he can then coordinate those responses. So, KD0CDQ, Helm is all yours, and thank you for the privilege of being here. I always enjoy being paired up with Chief because he helps make things look so good with how good he is. Okay. KD0CDQ, NO70, over.
NO70, may I congratulate you and also the Chief, W4RFJ. You've both done an excellent job tonight. Those questions were very interesting because it seems like some of that's new material or material that I have never absorbed. Very, very well done. I like questions that are and answers that are relevant, things that really mean something to us, like you got into tonight. You didn't realize it, but as you were doing the net, we are under a severe storm warning here. We got areas activated, and I went outside. We've got 3/4-inch size hail, 50-mile-an-hour wind, so I've been checking that out at the same time I've been doing this net here. But, yes, amateur radio will never lose its flavor as long as there's people who take it seriously, and we get out there in foul weather and check things out and assist people as needed with amateur radio. Amateur radio is more than a hobby, although we'll leave it at that. Thank you so much again. I appreciate it, George and Roger. You did a fine job tonight, and we're looking forward to you again on Tuesday. And Tuesday's question pool, if I'm reading it right, is Echo 4, Charlie 01, to Echo 5, Bravo 12. I think that's the questions that we'll be covering on Tuesday night. So I look forward to that for some more excellent learning and some good instruction. I appreciate your instruction tonight for both of you. And, hey, what are we going to do? This is amateur radio. We're supposed to enjoy ourselves at the same time that we serve our community, and I think we're doing both tonight. Is there anyone else that has a comment they would like to make on tonight's questions or any of the questions at all? Please go now. This is KD0CDQ.
K2HA.
Go right ahead.
Yeah, thank you, Michael. The E3B08 has been pulled from the question pool, the gray line question, and I checked on that. My analysis of that is that is a technician question, and it shouldn't be in the extra pool. So time has run out for the hour tonight, but I'll still take a few check-ins for the rag chew if anybody wants to hang around. This is Fred, K2HA.
K2HA, this is KD0CDQ.
Mike, I have another comment also, NO70.
Okay, if anyone else has a comment, or if you want to make a comment, George, go right ahead. This is KD0CDQ.
Well, thank you, Mike. And I realized maybe I better put some comment about to my earlier little tease of a comment about using a teacher voice. Kathy, K6SUN, Miss Sunshine, is our net manager, and she's my boss and everything. But she is also a school teacher in Florida. And we're all aware of the challenges that they are faced with to protect their students, to protect themselves, trying to help maintain a learning environment and a safe and comfortable environment for their students. And I know there are a lot of teachers as well. No, Ms. Sunshine is so sweet anyway. But realizing and thinking about what she is having to go through, and then someone sent me a little email today talking about where they asked me not to make them use their teacher voice with something that I had emailed them about, and I thought that was pretty good. So then that said, during the next night, I said, Miss Sunshine has her hands full, so let me ask each of you, as you can, if you want to, just send an email in and say to our net manager, K6SU and Kathy, Miss Sunshine, what she means to us and all her students. And that was where that comment came from. I felt like I should fill that in before it ended. Thank you. KD0CDQ, NO70, over.
Thank you for that message, NO70. Appreciate that, and we do appreciate Kathy. We definitely do. Even though she's in the background tonight, she's not out of our minds. So thank you very much for being there. And is any other comments anyone like to make about these classes or about any of the questions or anything in general? Please go ahead now. You've got the floor. Over. KD0, CDQ.
KN6, FPS.
Go right ahead, KN6, FPS. That's David. Go ahead, David.
Yeah, this is KN6, FPS. So just some comments on the solar question. I've been an amateur astronomer for a very long time, and spaceweather.com is one of my favorite pages for doing checking to see whether it's worth taking my solar telescope out. And of course, now as a ham radio operator, I have other excuses to check that page as well. And for those interested, today's K index is 1, and there are no solar sunspots today. Also, in the same vein as the ham radio operators, the amateur astronomers have also been very active in making discoveries and things that sometimes the professional astronomers don't find. So I kind of find that as a correlation as well. So this is KN6FES. Thanks, everyone, for the class, and we'll see you on Tuesday. KN6FES, back to you.
This is KD0CDQ. Are there more comments? Come on with your comments. You've got the time. You've got our ears. We're listening. And we do appreciate that Fred put aside the net tonight for us, because that's a real, that rag shoe is really interesting on Sunday night. And I like to get into it, but I'm not always available. So Fred, do you have anything more you'd like to add? Because this is normally your time. KD0CDQ.
Well, thanks for asking, Mike. I thought the presenters did a fantastic job tonight. All the presenters have over the nights, and I think it's a very valuable service that SouthCars, the digital version here on EchoLink, is doing for ham radio. So we really appreciate that. The explanations, I believe, are the most important thing. The answers, you know, you can look those up, but understanding the question and understanding the answer is, I think, what prepares people for the test and for being a great ham radio operator. Okay, thank you, Michael. Back to you, and when you're done, let me know. This is Fred, K2HA.
Hey, this is KD0CDQ, and usually a sunny place called Texas, almost as sunny as Florida. But we have a Confederate gray sky tonight. Again, we have a stormy night. So it's been interesting trying to follow the Q&A's here tonight and looking straight out my window and watching the trees do a hula out there. It would probably make Gordon feel at home. But, yes, ham radio is interesting. Hams are interesting. We should never forget. Again, it's more than a hobby. Anyone else have anything to say? I'll be here, but I'm not going to make any more comments tonight. God bless until Tuesday night. KD0, CDQ.